Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Tadi Aleph, Amud Aleph, seven lines down. The Gemara is still discussing the position of Reb Yehuda, who says that he thinks that only one of the two legs has a hidden asher. And he says that that machrat, it makes sense that it's the right leg. The Gemara wanted to know if that was a definitive statement, which means mina Torah, he thinks it's the right leg, or is that spuke misapkile? He didn't really know. He says that logically, I would have thought it was the right leg, but I don't have a conclusive answer as to which one it is. So we've been trying to prove which of those two positions of Rabbi Yehuda is correct. We rejected the last one that we brought from Breita. Now we have the next one. Tashma. Achal mizeh kezayit, mizeh kezayit. He eats a kezayit from one and then a kezayit from another. Sofeg shmonim. Then he gets 80 malkot. Rabbi Yehuda omer, inu sofeg ala arbaim. He only gets 40 malkot. He amart bishlama mishap shitalei shapir. If, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's straightforward that you are chayav when you eat the right leg, then I understand what's going on here. Eliyah Martz, Fuke Misapkile, if he is uncertain as to which leg it is, Avilei Hatrat Safek, then it is a Hatra without a definitive conclusion that you're going to violate this Isur. Shemina Lei Rabbi Yehuda, Damar Hatrat Safek, Lov Shema Hatra. And we know that Rabbi Yehuda believes that Hatrat Safek does not work. Because over here, if he eats a kezayit from one, and then a kezayit from other, in the position of the chachamim, where both legs are chayav, you're going to get 80 malkot. According to Rabbi Yehuda, which only one of the two legs is problematic, then you ate from both legs. So mimon nafshach, you are chayav, and you should be chayav 40. That assumes that you did it under one warning. You did it in one bevat achat at one time, because then mimon nafshach, you violated the Isur of Gidur Nashem. On the other hand, if you believe that it's a safek, and you warn him not to eat the right leg, and then he eats it. You warn him not to eat the left leg, and then he eats it. Each one of those hatra'ot in and of themselves was a safek. You're not sure whether he's going to violate it when you give him that warning. And if hatra'at safek fails as a hatra'ah, then you can't give malkot in that case. So it seems to be that it's pretty clear that Rabbi Yehuda believes that it really is the right leg and not a safek. The Tanya, we have evidence of this, and we saw this earlier in the Adab Pei Bet, that Tanya ikad zeh, the chazar ikad zeh. He hit this one, and then he hit the other one. This is a case where a woman got married without waiting the requisite 3 months between her previous marriage and her new marriage. She has a baby 7 months after her new marriage, so we're uncertain as to whether the baby is the baby of the second marriage, 7 months in term, or the baby is from the first marriage, 9 months in term, and so he has a safek as to which of the two is his father. So if he hits one, and then he hits the other, I mean, he hits the one possible father, and then the other possible father, or kileletze, v'chazari kileletze, or he cursed the one individual, and then the other individual, ikashneem bevat achat, he hit both of them simultaneously, or shikileletzneem bevat achat, or he cursed both of them simultaneously, chayav. In all those instances, he's chayav, because mimon nafshach, he hit his father, which is an isur, doraita, to hit the parent. And if you do hit the parent, you're subject to a chiyuv mita, and same with cursing. So over here, since he hit both possible individuals who could be his father, mimon nafshach, he hit his father, or he cursed his father, and therefore he is chayav. Rabbi Yehuda omer, bevat achat chayav bezeh chazer patur. Rabbi Yehuda says that's only true when it's done simultaneously. Because in that instance, you can give a atrat vadai. You do it simultaneously, mimon nafshach, you're hitting the father, but you're also doing it in the same action or motion, and therefore if you warn him, it's a good warning. If he does it sequentially, then each warning, you have a safek as to whether he's really hitting the father in that case. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda says, "Bevadachat your chayav, zechazeh patur," shows you that he believes that hatrat safek, lo shma hatra'ah. If that's the case, then we have clear evidence to the fact that Rabbi Yehuda believes that it's the right leg, and that's it, and not a safek, because otherwise you couldn't have chayav makot arbaim for eating the right leg and then the left leg. But it says, "Haytana sabalak idach tana de Rabbi Yehuda." This Tana holds like the other position of Rabbi Yehuda, Tamar Hatrat Safek Shmatra, who believes that there is a concept of Hatrat Safek. It's a machloket in the Breitot as to whether Rabbi Yehuda holds of Hatrat Safek or doesn't hold. The previous Breitot makes it clear that he thinks Hatrat Safek fails. That's why only Bevat Achat are you Chayav, but Zeh Chazer you're not Chayav. On the other hand, we're going to have a Breitot now that seems to indicate that he thinks Hatrat Safek is Hatrat the Tanya. Lotot Yerimenu Ad Boker, you should not leave over from the Korban of Pesach until the morning. And then that which you lift over into the morning has to be burnt. The reason it says, don't leave it over to the morning. And if you do leave it over to the morning, you should burn it. That is a lava nitak de'aseh. Omar Hashem looking at lav divrei Rabbi Yehuda. You see from this that you don't get makot for it because it's a lav anitak le'aseh. It's a lav that has a rectification after the violation of the lav. It tells you don't do this. If you do this, then the way to rectify it is to burn it afterwards. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, lo min Hashem was there. That's not the reason you don't get makot over here. The reason is because it's a violation that is a passive violation. You don't do anything actively when you leave it over. You desist from eating it, and that's why it's left over. And when you have a lav that does not have an action associated with it, you're not kayav. Now, the reason why both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yaakov's positions are that you don't get makot over here is because the parshia of lo tachsom shor b'disho is juxtaposed to the parshia of makot in the Torah, in Parshat Ki Tetzeh. And therefore, the Torah Shebaal Peh darshins from that, that the quintessential lav, which you get makot for, is lo tachsom shor b'disho. And just like Tolok Taksom Meshur B'disho is only a plain lav, and not a lav anitak da'aseh, so only plain lavin get makot, not a lav anitak da'aseh. And just like Lo Taksom Meshur B'disho is an active violation of a lav, and you get makot, so to only lavin that are active violations will you get makot for. So that's why the Lo Tatirim Menu at Boker fails on both counts. It fails because, first of all, it's a lav anitak da'aseh, and therefore it's not the same as that paradigm of Lo Taksom Meshur B'disho. It's also lav shein bo maaseh. Now, from here you would conclude two things about Rabbi Yehuda's position. First of all, he believes that lav shein bo maaseh lo ken alav. Otherwise, you wouldn't need lav anitak de'aseh. The reason he needs lav anitak de'aseh to make you patur is because lav shein bo maaseh, he thinks you are chayav. The second thing you see from here is that, given the fact that he says the problem here is lav anitak de'aseh, shows you that he believes hatrat safek shma hatra'ah. Because he could have just said the problem here is hatrat safek. Anytime you tell the person, you're going to violate Lo Tatirim Menu at Boker, he still has more time to eat it. The expiry is only at the tail end of the night, and at that moment he becomes chayav to burn it. So if you warn him before that point in time, then it's hatrat safek. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you are patur because of lav anitak de'aseh, not because of hatrat safek. That shows you that he believes hatrat safek works. And the problem over here, or the reason you're not going to get malkot, is because it's a lav anitak de'aseh. Again, it's always hatrat safek, as Rashi says, the Shema kodem alot ha-shachar yochlenu. Maybe before dawn, he's going to eat it. There is a possibility, a very minute possibility, that you warn him right at that last moment, right before the crossover, where it will no longer be able to eat it. But first of all, that's very difficult to get to, and it may not even be clear where that threshold is. And therefore, it's always hatrat safek, despite the fact he says you are chayav. Once you do that, then in the case before, where he ate from the right leg and the left leg, could be that he's chayav arba'im, not because he knows for sure it's the right leg, but he was chayav arba'im because hatrat safek, shma hatra'ah. And that's why you are chayav arba'im in that case. Again, we don't have any proof from it. Tashma, achal bet gidim, ben bet yirechot, ben bet me'emot. You eat two gidim from two thighs, from two animals. Sofeg monim, you get 80 malkot. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, enu sofeg ela arba'im. Over there, you only get 40. Midgamar mibet yirechot, mibet be'emot. Fact that it says two thighs from two different animals, shita de tarvayu li'isura, that both of them are asur. Ula Rabbi Yehuda itzrich. And the reason we have to tell you that this information is because of Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda tells you that you're only chayev arba'im, you're not chayev shmonim. Shma mina, mifshat pshita le, shma mina. See from here that it's pretty straightforward that he holds that it's the right leg, period. Because the first thing is, if you wanted to tell me he ate from the right leg and the left leg, then you could do it from a single animal. You don't have to tell me that he ate from two animals. If he ate from one animal, you could have a scenario of right and left leg. The fact that it said he ate from two animals means that he ate the same leg from both animals. So the fact that it is two animals by definition tells you that we're just in the same leg twice. According to the Chachamim, who say that you're in violation every time you eat, you're going to get 80 malkot. Rabbi Yehuda over here says you only get 40 malkot, which is a little difficult according to both views in Rabbi Yehuda. The first possibility is that he thinks it's a safek. Now, if it's a safek, he should have gotten no malkot, because he ate the same leg twice, and he doesn't know which leg it is that you're chayav for. So it's a possibility that you didn't eat a gidin ashe at all. So that's why the Gemara concludes it must be that's mifsha pshitale. It's straightforward to Rabbi Yehuda that the right leg is chayav and not the left leg. So now, the Gemara is going to ask this in 1 second, but then you should have gotten 80 as well. Because you ate twice the right leg, according to Rabbi Yehuda. If you know it's the right leg, you should get 80 malkot. So that's what the Gemara says. V'i pshitalei, amai sofeg arbaim. Why does he only get 40? Too low. And no more, loke shmoni. He should get 80. If he knows for sure it's the right leg, and you ate the right leg twice, you should get 80. Hacha mayaskinan. This is similar to the Gemara we saw back on Pei Gimel. Kagom delay pei kezayit. It's a case where you don't have a kezayit in there. The Tanya, have a bright. Achalo veimbo kezayit chayav. If he eats it, and the Gidon Hashed does not have a kezayit, then you are chayav. The Tanakamo believes, since it's a birya, it's a single entity that the Torah considers to be chashuv, that's enough to make you chayav. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, achio bo kezayit. You have to eat a full kezayit in order to be chayav, like any other isur achila in the Torah. If you don't eat a kezayit, you're not going to be chayav. So now, what is the scenario? Over here, Rashi suggests that the scenario is, shein ben shnehem ela kezayit. That between the two of them, it adds up to a kezayit. Which means that you have a half kezayit in one, a half kezayit in the other behema. You ate them together, you add it up to a kezayit. That's why you only chayav 40 malkot. For the Tanakama, who believes that eating the gidin ashen of itself is enough, so you ate two gidin, that makes you chayav shmonim. Whereas for Rabbi Yehuda, since you ate the right leg, you are chayav. But each leg did not have a sufficient shiur to make you chayav. On a consolidated basis, the two of them added up to give you a kezayit, and that's why you are chayav arba'im over here and not shmonim. Because in the end, you only had one violation, not two violations. All right, what you're saying is what Rashi says back on Pei Gimel. It's interesting that over here Rashi says exactly what he rejects back on Pei Gimel. Back on Pei Gimel, Rashi brings the explanation that he quotes over here, which is each one of them was a half kezayit. And then Rashi writes about that, Ve'ein nira ve'einai. He says, I think that's the wrong explanation. Shia Yehu, shtei hatra'ot mitzarfot. Why should two separate hatra'ot be mitzaref? We know for sure there's two hatra'ot, and why should they be mitzaref? The only thing that should matter is, di ochelei lebatra betol kedei achile pras. If he eats the second one within the kedei achile pras of the first one, hainu bevat achat, then it's considered to be one violation, and I understand why you'd add them together. Ve'ila achar kedei achile pras, if it's longer than the duration of kedei achile pras, they don't add up together. So what does this have to do with hatra'ah? The only thing that matters over here is whether you ate it within enough time to be considered one entity, or you ate it in a time that it's not considered to be one entity. Whether you give hatra'ah or not is meaningless in this case. And therefore, Rashi claims that the scenario over there is one of them had a kezayit, and the other one did not have a kezayit. So according to the Chachamim, you're chayav for both. Chayav the one that had a kezayit, you're chayav for the one that is the entire gid. Rabbi Yehuda, even though both gidim, technically you should be chayav for, only one of them met the standard or threshold of a kezayit. So you're chayav for that one. The one that was less, you're not chayav for. That's the way Rashi explained it back on Pei Gimel, Amud Aleph. On the other hand, Ramban and many of the Rishonim disagree with Rashi and say that the scenario here is where it's a chatzi kezayit and a chatzi kezayit. And the chiddush is that the hatra'ot don't cause you to separate out the entities. You might have thought, I warned you not to eat this, and then you go ahead and eat it. I warned you not to eat the other one, and then you went ahead and ate it. We might have thought that those are two separate actions because I warned you separately. I warned you on the first one, and then I warned you on the second one. You might have thought that that creates a division or an automatic separation between the two of them. The chiddush is that even though you gave hatra'ah in between, they're still considered to be a single entity if they're eaten within a day achilat pras. And that's how the other Rishonim explained the chiddush over here, as to why the hatra'ah makes a difference or doesn't make a difference. You possibly would have thought it was a deficit. Long comes the Gemara to give you the chiddush that it's not a deficit. So that's how the other Rishonim read it. Interesting enough, Rashi over here does not bring his position. If you look in the Gimel of the Gota Bach over here, he tries to change the Girsin Rashi to match what Rashi says back on Pei Gimel, because it's so strange that Rashi would go against what he said in Pei Gimel, where he discards this explanation and says that that's not the correct way to understand the Gemara. All right, so now the Gemara wants to know, but time am I? How did Rabbi Yehuda know that it was the right leg that the Gidon Hashed you're chayav for, and not the left leg? Amar Rav Amar Kra HaYerech. When it comes to the Gidon Hashed, it uses the Hey HaYidiyah, HaMiyumenet SheBeYerech, the dexterous one of the two. And generally, when we talk about dexterity, we're speaking about the right hand, because majority of people are righties, and therefore anytime you talk about HaMiyumenet, or the specific one which everybody knows about with the Hei HaYidiyah, we assume that it's referencing to the right side. And so to over here, when it uses the term ha-yerech, al-kein lo yuchlu b'nei Yisrael et yedan asher, asher kaf ha-yerech ad ha-yom hazeh, ki naga b'kaf yerech Yaakov b'gidan asher. So you see it uses the hey ha-yediyah b'kaf ha-yerech, so that's the reason that he picks, that he thinks it's the right side. Rabbonon, how would the poshit Yisrei b'kule yerech la-fuke chitzon d'lo? The reason that it says ha-yerech is to tell you that the Isur applies to all of the hips or the thighs, but it only applies to a portion of the Yerech, which is that, as we saw before, and again we're going to see on Tzadik Gimel, but we'll spend more time on this, there are two Gidin that come down the Yerech. There's the Gid HaChitzon and the Gid HaPnimi, and it's only the Gid HaPnimi that you are Chayav for, not the Gid HaChitzon. The Gid HaChitzon is Asur Midrabanan, but Midoraita, it's only Pnimi. And that's what it means, HaYerech. It's the one that's associated with the Yerech. It's the one that is more closely tied to the Yerech. And that's the one that is Asur. So that's what they do with the Hey Hayidiyah. Even though they believe both Gidim, both right and left, are affected. Nevertheless, only one of the two Gidim in each one of the thighs is Asur. And that's what Hayerech comes to teach you. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi Amar Kra, Behav Ko Imo, that when he was tussling, quarreling with the Malach, what is that Behav Koimo teach you? Ki Adam Shechuvek et Chaveiro v'yado magat l'kaf yimino shel Chaveiro. So he reads Behav Koimo that they were wrestling, that when people wrestle, they hugged each other. And therefore, when the Malach is hugging Yaakov, when they're wrestling, his right arm, which would be the one that he's going to hit with, reaches around the back of Yaakov, and then it hits Yaakov on the right hip. Because when you're facing someone, if you hit with your right hand, you would hit them on the left side. But when you are hugging or holding each other, your right arm goes around the back of the individual. So when he hit him in the hip from behind, then he hit his right hip. And that's how we know it's the right side, because of Behav Ko Imo. So that explanation is exactly the way that Rashi explains it, Al Torah. He says, V'lashon aramihu, ve'avik imo is the aviku bay, va'avik le mevak, which means to hold together or to hold tightly, lashon aniva, to be wrapped up together. So came derech shnayim shemitatzmim lapil ish et reu, when they are wrestling to knock each other down, shechovko v'ovko bezerotav, you hug or you grab him around with your arms in order to pull him down. The Rashi brings this explanation, although before that he brings a perush from Menachem, which is perush v'itafar ish. The word heavko comes the word avak, to kick up dust. And when people are fighting, they kick up dust because of all the movement and the shifting of positions that kicks up dust. And that's why he calls it Behav Ko. So now that's the reason that Rabbi Yehuda says the right leg is the one that has the Gidin Hashem. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani Amar Kovei Kochavim Nidmelo. This Malach appeared to Yaakov like a goy. Damar Mar, Israel Shnitfalo Oved Kochavim Baderech. If you have a non-Jew, this is from the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that joins you or is accompanying you on a trip, toflo lemino, put him to your right side, keep him to your right. The reason being, as the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, when you are a righty, you wear your sword on your left side. The sheath for your sword is on the left side because you draw the sword across your body. So now, if you keep the individual to your right side, the sheath is on your right side. That means that, first of all, you'll see right away when he goes to grab his sheath to draw his sword. And number two is, when he draws the sword, he's got to pull it away and then come back, so it gives you time. On the other hand, if he's on your left side, then the sheath is away from you. You can't see him grabbing the sword. And also, in the same action that he grabs the sword, when he pulls it across his body, he will then hit you or kill you with the sword. So you will have no warning for that. So if you keep the goy to your right side, you'll have, number one, a warning, because you can see him drawing from the sheath. And number two, so you have more time, because in the single action of drawing, he can't hit you. He has to draw the sword and then come back and hit you, so it gives you more time to be prepared. On the other hand, if he's on your left side, then he could draw the sword without you noticing. And number two is, in that single action of drawing the sword, he could actually hit you or kill you. So that's the advice given, that you keep him to your right side. So that's the suggestion here as to why the right hip of Yaakov was hit, was he kept the Malach to his right side. And therefore, when the Malach went to hit him, he hit him on his right hip, because he was on the right side of Yaakov. So that's his explanation for Rabbi Yehuda's position. Rav Shmuel bar Acha kamei de Rav Papa mishmei de Rav bar Ula amar ki tamid chacham nidmelo. No, he appeared to him like a tamid chacham and not like an oved kovchavim. Da amar mar, because we have another piece of etiquette, which is hamalech the yamin rabo, someone who walks on the right side of his rebbe, or is it boor? That person lacks basic etiquette or basic derech eretz. So therefore, what Yaakov did was, in order to give respect to this individual, he didn't walk on the right side of him. It would be improper for him to be on the right side of his rebbe. So since he became appeared as a Talmud Chacham, he kept himself on the left side of the malach. Well, if he's on the left side of the malach, his right hip is facing the malach. When the malach hit him, he hit him on his right hip. So here they're all explaining why Rabbi Yehuda believes it's the right side to get an Asheh Asurin. We had three different possibilities over here. One is because Hayerech, it has the Hey Yidiyah, Hayerech I may you men it, the one that is more dexterous, and that's the right side. We saw the possibility that it appeared as a Obed of Avodah Zarah, so he would have kept him on his right side, and therefore when the Malach hit him, he hit him on the right hip of Yaakov, or that he appeared to him as the Talmud Chacham, and then it would only be appropriate for Yaakov to be on the left of him, not on the right of him. So they're walking together, again, his right hip is facing the Malach, and that's why his right hip is the one that was hit, and that's why to get an Asheh on the right side is problematic. Now, it's interesting that they have a machloket as to whether he appeared as a goy or as a Talmud Chacham. Here they're discussing it from perspective of placement to explain why his right hip was hit. But I think you could see it also in terms of the agadic implications of that. The Gemara tells us that it is Saro Shel Esav, that which appeared to Yaakov is Saro Shel Esav, which represents the Yetzer Hara, which represents these individuals or entities or experiences that are trying to take a person off the path. And sometimes he appears like a Talmud Chacham, sometimes he appears like a goy. Sometimes it's easier to sway you from your way by appearing as a goy. Sometimes he appears as your friend, as a Talmud Chacham, in order to sway you. So here it's not that maybe they're mutually exclusive, but maybe they are trying to express the idea that sometimes the Yetzer Hara appears as a Talmud Chacham, sometimes he appears as a goy, and sometimes he's more dangerous when he appears like a Talmud Chacham, when he is your friend, and he looks like he's encouraging you to do that which is good, but in the end he can cause you to trip up, and sometimes he appears as a goy in order to trip you up. The Rabbonon, how do the Rabbonon deal with all these proofs that Rabbi Yehuda has that it should be the right hip? They're saying it's on both hips. They say, Machorei Ato. He came up from behind him, and he clipped him on both sides. So the malach came up from behind him and he hit him on both hips at the same time. And he caused the dislocation of both hips simultaneously. And that's why the Gidan Asher applies to both hips. Rabbanon, hai b'hav ko imo, maitar shube. What do they do b'hav ko imo if they don't think it has to do with him hugging him, reaching around to the right hip to hit his right hip? They need it for the other drush of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Dam Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Lamed Shalu Avak Miraglotam Ad Kisei HaKavod, that they kicked up dust until it reaches the Kisei HaKavod. So first of all, as we saw before, Menachem, that Rashi quotes, interprets Ve'av Koimo to be kicking up dust. He doesn't read it like the agadic explanation, but more from the Pshat, which is that they were wrestling and they were kicking up dust. But you see here that the Gemara reads Ve'av Koimo to mean kicking up dust. Kicking up dust, it reaches the Kisei HaKavod, Ktiv Acha Be'av Koimo, because the term Ha'av Koimo is used here for the wrestling between the Malach and Yaakov. Ktiv Otam, and it says in Nachum, it says, Hashem Erech Hapahim, Ugdal Koach, V'nake Lo Yinake, Hashem B'sufau B'sara Darko, V'anan Avak Raglav. So it's a description of the revelation of Hashem and the tremendous tempest that surrounds him. And there it says, Banan Avak Raglav. And that cloud of dust is by his feet. And so just like over here, there's Avak up there. So the Gemara sees a correlation between the two, which will also be connected to a Gemara we're going to see upcoming, the connection between Yaakov and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Yaakov being up near HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rami Yavashum and Levi, Nama Nikra Shmo Gid HaNasheh. Why is it called the Gid HaNasheh? Shenasha Mimkomo. Because it moved from its place, it dislocated, ve'ala, and then jumped up, so that the hit caused the hip joint, or the bone, to dislocate and move up out of place. V'cheinu omer. And so too, in Yirmiyahu it says, nashta giburatam, hayu the nashim. May not be politically correct, But it says here that their strength, their bravery left them, slipped away from them. Hayulanashim, they became like women who are weaker. I mean, they lost their power. They're going to be defeated because their gvura has nashta, slipped away, or Ray Rashi uses the term kafatz, it jumped out of place, or it left them, so they no longer have gvura. And similarly over here, gida nasheh is because it jumped out of place, it was dislocated from its proper place. Amar Rabbi Yossi v'Rabbi Chanina, mai dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk, davar shalach Hashem b'Yakov, v'nafal b'Yisrael? Hashem sent something that was particular to Yaakov, but had ramifications for Klal Yisrael. Davar shalach b'Yakov, zegid ha-nasheh. The thing that Hashem sent to Yaakov was that his hip was dislocated in this fight with the Malach. But nafal b'Yisrael, and that had ramifications for Klal Yisrael forever, because shepashat Yisrael b'chol Yisrael. That's what the pasuk says. Al kein lo yuchlu bnei Yisrael gid ha-nasheh. The hip of Yaakov was dislocated. That precipitated the Yisur for bnei Yisrael to eat the gid ha-nasheh. V'amar Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina, ma dichtiv utvoach tevach v'achein. We saw this pasuk quoted earlier. According to Rabbi Shimon, to have a shechita haru'ya, to be called a shechita. It's with regards to the brothers visiting Yosef, where he instructs the person who's in charge of his house to prepare the food for the brothers who are going to eat with him. He says, utvoach tevach, do a shechita v'achein and prepare it. Tavoach tevach v'arlehem beit ha-shechita. Yosef instructs the person in his house to show them the shechita that he did. And v'achein, and he says to them, tu gid ha-nasheh bifneihem. Do the nikur of the gid ha-nasheh in front of them so they see that it is removed. K'man da'amar, this is of course according to one who says, gid ha-nasheh neser l'bnei noach. That the gid ha-nasheh was restricted b'nei noach. Again, we saw the machloket rishonim as to whether it means b'nei noach in general. Or it means Bnei Yaakov, who were the Bnei Noach, or their status was Bnei Noach at that time, because it says, Al kein lo yuchlu Bnei Yisrael gid ha-nasheh. And Bnei Yisrael, you would read literally as the sons of Israel, meaning the Bnei Yaakov, that were restricted. Over here, Rashi makes a comment, which is very difficult, and then the Baal HaTosafot the folk pick up on it, which is, why did they need to have the animal shechted? This is pre-Matan Torah. There's no din of shechita. Why do they require a shechita be done on the animal? So Rashi says, Lefinish Ibnei Yaakov, Shomrei Mitzvot Hayu. The children of Yaakov, the Shvatim, kept the Mitzvot. Torah, Mikubalim Hayu Mabutayim. Even though they didn't receive the Torah yet, they had a Mitzorah from their forefathers that you do Shechita, and they can only eat an animal with Shechita. The difficulty with that statement is, the Gemara then says about Gid ha-nasheh, that the reason that they wanted the Gid ha-nasheh removed was because they hold like the one who says that Bnei Noach are Chayab in Gid ha-nasheh. But why do they need that if they are keeping all the mitzvot? If they're keeping all the mitzvot, Bnei Yisrael are Chayab in the mitzvah of Shechita and in the mitzvah of removing the Gid ha-nasheh. Why isn't that a sufficient reason in and of itself, rather than having to go down the path that it was according to the opinion that says that Bnei Noach are Chayab in Gid ha-nasheh? So Tosafot asks that question. He says, V'yesh lomar, midikamar v'achein mashma delav hachi lo mishtare. But that's what says the word hachain makes it sound like it is something that was asur, irrespective of whether they were keeping mitzvot or not keeping mitzvot, which seems to indicate had they not been keeping the mitzvot, they still would have had to remove it. That's one possibility. Inami, the more likely reason is, paralo beit ha-shechita haynu nechira. Shenitztavu ala nechira. He says that paralo beit ha-shechita doesn't mean that they did shechita, means that they did nechira. And again, the nechira, we saw many times in Masechet, that Rashi gives different interpretations of what it means. One time he spoke about asphyxiation. One time he spoke about the fact that it has to be a cutting that cuts through the simanim. Another time he said it has to be something where they cut from the nose all the way down to the lungs. So all of those involved a cutting of the simanim, or somehow involved the simanim, and that was their requirement. They didn't have a din in shechita. They had a din in nechira. They had to use the simanim to kill it, but it didn't have to be shechita. And that way, Tosafot moves away from Rashi saying and saying that they didn't have the mitzvot of Matan Torah, Shechita, and Gid ha-nasheh. They did this because they had a din in Nechira. That's the proper way to kill the animal if you're not using Shechita. And number two is, according to the opinion that says, Bnei Noach, Rechayim, and Gid ha-nasheh. And that's why they worried about it. Right now, the Gemara takes a digression from Gid ha-nasheh and speaks about the Garata, about that whole incident with regards to the Malach and Yaakov's trip to Haran. So it says there that the reason Yaakov gets into this altercation with the Malach is because Vayivater Yaakov Levado, that Yaakov was left alone, Vayavek Yishimo at Alot HaShachar, and then he wrestles with this Malach until the break of dawn. Amar Rav Elazar Shenishtara Pachim Ktanim. Why was Yaakov Levado? That is because he had already taken over Vayavor et Mabar Yabok. He already crossed Mabar Yabok. He took everybody across the river, and he got everything moved from where he was to the new location. And then it sounds like, how is he left alone if he took everything across and he's with his family? The answer must be that he went back to get something while everybody else already had crossed Nachal Yabok. And so what Rabbi Eliezer suggests over here is, Yishtarlo Pachim Ktanim. He had small utensils that he left behind that he went to gather, and that's why he was found alone. You see over here that Yaakov was willing to, quote unquote, risk his life to go back and get these pachim tanim because the mamon of tzaddikim is more valuable to them than their guf. Why would you do that? It seems to be a mix-up with regards to your priorities. A misguided view is that you put your money above your guf. Says the fish, in pushtim yedem begazel, because they don't take what doesn't belong to them. So now what it's saying, and Rashi makes the note of this, which is, if you don't take from anybody else, and you don't take from Gozel, then you look at everything that you've been given as a gift from Hashem. And that means that Hashem gave it to you for your particular use, and for you to benefit from, and utilize it in service of Hashem. If you look at everything that you get in that light, then everything becomes important and significant. You don't just throw things out. You don't just waste money, because Hashem gifted you this, to have the capacity to do the right thing, as well as the fact that you're not going to take from anybody else. You're not going to take anything that's questionable. Then you have limited resources, and you don't want to lose those limited resources. And that's why he went back to get his pachim tanim. Vayavek ishimo ad alot hashachar. He wrestled with the malach until dawn. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, mikan, the Talmud Chacham, shlo yitze yechidi balayla. Talmud Chacham shouldn't go out at night alone. Now, Balei HaTosafot over here say, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, the Davka Nakat Tamid Chacham. This is unique to a Tamid Chacham, Mishum the Mazikim Mitkanim Bayam. Because the Mazikim are looking out for them. Because you're in a higher level, the Mazikim look at you as a target. And the Balei Tosafot quote that there are three individuals who are the target of Mazikim and shouldn't be left alone. And that is Melech, Tamid Chacham, and Chatan. And all of them need an extra Shimur. And that's what the Gemara is saying over here. That a Talmud Chacham at Tzaddik shouldn't be walking around alone because he's at risk at night. Now, even though the Gemara in Pesachim and in Baba Kama says, Lola mikanes adam bechitov, a person should always enter a city when it's still light out, and he should only leave the city when it's light out, makes it sound like this is a generic suggestion, not just for a Talmud Chacham. So Tosafot differentiates. He says, they're speaking about Hotam, Mayri Mirachok min Ha'ir. When you're going to be far away from the city, because over there, there's many things that could go wrong, and problems that could arise, and marauders that are running around. So in that case, you should only leave the city at daylight and enter the city at daylight, so you're not exposed to those dangers further away from the city when it's nightfall. Over here, we're saying even close to the city limits, or even within the city, a Talmud Chacham, a Tzaddik, shouldn't walk alone at night, because he's at high risk for the Mazikin coming after him, and he needs extra Shimur. And we learned that from the fact that Yaakov, after going back and being alone, was attacked by the Malach. Rabbi Ava Bar Kana Amar Meocha, we learned that from this. Hinehu Zoret Agoren HaSeorim. When Naomi is telling Ruth that she should go down to the fields of Boaz, and he will be there because he's going to be winnowing, and they are dealing with the threshing floor at this point, she says, you're for sure going to find him in the field. How did she know that he was going to be in the field overnight? He ended up sleeping in the Goren. But how did Naomi know that beforehand? Why did she suggest that to Ruth? So you would have said it's because that was the common practice. When they worked in the Goren, they used to sleep by the Goren because they used to have to work around the clock and they didn't have time to go home. But here the Gemara suggests the reason that he didn't go home is because he's going to finish at night. And it's a gnayu the tamidei chachamim let's say balayla. It's not appropriate for a Talmud Chacham to leave at night and to return home. And therefore he's going to stay in the Goren and not walk home because nightfall had already come. And if he's working so hard and it's nightfall, he's going to sleep there. And that's how Naomi knew that Boaz would be in the Goren overnight. Rabbi Yehoshua Amar Mehocha, Vayeshkem Avram Baboker, Vayachavosh Et Chamoro. Avram got up early in the morning, and then he saddled his donkey. That's from the Akedah, where Avram gets up early in the morning in order to go out on his trip to follow the instructions of Hashem to do Akedat Yitzchak. The problem with bringing that as a proof, as the Baal Tosfot point out, is that, first of all, over there, he got up and he had two other people accompanying him. So he wasn't alone. So how can you prove anything about him being alone and getting up in the morning when he wasn't alone? That's number one. Number two is the Gemara in Psachim learns from this Pasuk about Zrizim, Maktemin the Mitzvot, that a Zariz that gets up, he gets up early in the morning, but he doesn't have to get up before Alot HaShachar. Because even Avram, who is the ultimate Zariz, only Vayeshkem Avram Baboker, he only got up in the morning. You don't have to get up earlier than the morning in order to be a Zariz. If you have a mitzvah to do that day, the morning is the time to do it, and that's considered to be a Zariz. So the Gemara brings that as a proof, but again, that might not be the case as a proof, because if you're telling me the reason that Avram left that morning was because he was too afraid to leave at night, then that's not a proof that Zariz is only until the morning. The reason he delayed until the morning was because it was dangerous, not because of the fact that he was a Zariz. For that reason, that Baal HaTosafot suggests that the pasuk that should be over here is Vayeshkem Avraham Baboker. Period. There's twice that the Torah tells us Vayeshkem Avraham Baboker. Once is by Akedat Yitzchak, the other one is by Sodom, when he goes to try to defend or save Sodom. There it also says Vayeshkem Avraham Baboker. So what the Baal HaTosafot suggests is leave out Vayechavosh Et Chamoro. It's a reference to the davening that Avram does for Sodom. And he says the reason that's a proof is because he should have gotten up at night in order to daven for Sodom, in order to be as quick as possible to try to save them. The fact that he waits until the morning shows you it would have been dangerous for him to go out at night, and that's why he waits until the morning. And in that way, it's Vayeshkem Avram Baboker is the proof, but it's not associated with Akedat Yitzchak where there are other people accompanying him. As well as the fact that now from Akedat Yitzchak, you can learn Vayeshkem Avraham Baboker is about Zrizut and not about the fact that he can't go alone outside because he wasn't alone. And therefore he could have left at night. The fact that he waited until the morning shows you that Zrizim only have to get up in the morning. They don't have to do that before it. And even though, truthfully, Avraham could have just taken people with him to go daven for Sodom at night and then he could have gone earlier, but the Baal HaTosafot would say the reason he didn't want to do that was because either he wanted to be alone when he davened with Hashem or when he spoke with Hashem, or he was going to preside over the destruction of Sodom, and it wasn't appropriate for anybody besides Avraham to be in that position. Therefore, he didn't want to take anybody to accompany him. Given that, he waited until the morning to go daven because it would have been too dangerous at night for him to go out. Rabbanan Amrei Mahalcha, the Rabbanan bring a proof from here, which is Lech Nare'ei Et Shlom Achecha, when Yaakov is sending Yosef to go see the brothers that were grazing the sheep out towards Shechem, so he tells them, Lech na re'ei, go and see what's going on. So the Gemara is medayeg from re'ei at a time that you can see. So he only sent them out at a time where you could see or where it's visible, and that's only during the daytime. Rav Amar Hocha, Rav says from this pasuk, it says afterwards by Yaakov, after the whole encounter, it says, Vayizrach lo ha-shemesh. Then the sun came up, and Asher avarei Penuel v'tzulei areicho, and he was limping. Meaning that the malach leaves by the time it's light out. So you see that the mazikim, or the attack on Yaakov, only took place at night. As soon as Vayizrach lo ha-shemesh, the malach went back to his place, and he left Yaakov alone. So that's a sign, again, that a Talmud Chacham that goes out at night is at risk. Our Rabbi Akiva, Sha'alti et Rabban Gamliel et Rabbi Yoshua be'idlis shel imum. I was in the meat shuk of imum, walking with Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Gamliel. Sha'alchu likach be'ema l'mishteh b'no shel Rabbi Gamliel. They were in the meat shuk because they were purchasing an animal to be for the feast of the marriage of the son of Rabban Gamliel. And I asked them the following question, Dei v'izrach lo ha-shemesh. It says that the sun rose for him. For Yaakov, v'chiv shemesh lo levad zarcha, for him alone the sun rose, v'alo l'chol olam zarcha. Why doesn't it just say, v'izrach ha-shemesh, that the sun rose? Why is it, v'izrach lo ha-shemesh, for him the sun rose? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak,
Shemesh ba'avuro, zarcha ba'avuro.
The answer to that question is that the sun that set for him also rose for him. Meaning, just like the sun set early for Yaakov, which we're going to discuss now, so too the sun rose early for Yaakov. In this case, in order, number one, to end the problem with the malach, and number two is, we know that the Gemara says in other places, Shemesh marpeh, that the sun provided healing for Yaakov, and it says in the Pasuk, Vayizrach lo Shemesh kasher evad panel b'hu tzoleya arecho, only at that point was he limping. But once he continued on and the sun was healing in nature, then he walks off without limping anymore. It was only then at that moment he limped, but afterwards he was cured of the limp because of the sun that was shining down. So the sun was curative. So then that it came earlier was to the benefit of Yaakov. But it rose early to make up for the time that it set early when Yaakov was traveling to Haran, which is, the Gemara says over here, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, Vayelech Harana. Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva and goes to Haran. Uchtiv, and then the next pasuk is, Vayifka Mamakom. It bumps into the place. Well, if Yaakov went from Be'er Sheva already to Haran, why is he bumping into anything? He's already at his destination. Ki matol Haran. Yaakov went all the way to Haran. Amar, Efshar Avarti al-Makom Shitbalu Abutai. Is it possible that I passed the place that my forefathers davened in? Vani lo itbalalti, and I didn't daven there? Kod Yoiv Dati al-Mahad there. When he determined that he was going to return to go back to the place where his forefathers had davened in, meaning that place by Yeshkem Avram Baboker, where Avram davened, and by Yitzhak Yitzchak Lasuach Basadeh, when Yitzchak went out to the field to daven, and the place where Akedat Yitzchak took place, all of those are, according to Chazal, on Har HaMoriah. So he goes back. Kofsale Aram Yad. He had a shortening of the journey. The land jumped and made it by Gaba Makom. He bumped into the place immediately. Kad Tzali by the Meidar. After he had davened at that place, he wanted to go back to Haran to finish up his journey. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tzadik Zeh Ba'al Beit Loni. This time he came to my lodging. Vayipater below Lina. He's going to leave without staying overnight. Yad Ba'ashemesh. Immediately the sun sets early to stop Yaakov from being able to travel anymore. Steve. And then it says, Vayikach Mavnei HaMakom. He takes from the stones of the location. And then afterwards it says, when he awakens, Vayikach Et HaEven, that he picked up the stone. Is it that there were many stones? Or is it that there was only one stone? The first pasuk says, Vayikach Mavnei HaMakom, Yaseh Merashotav. He put it around his head to protect him from the animals, to be like a pillow. But then when he wakes up in the morning, it says, Vayishkem Yaakov Baboker, Vayikach Et HaEven, Yaseh Merashotav. He just picks up a single stone. So what happened? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Malamesh, Nitkapsu Kolotan Avanim, L'Makom Echad. It was that all those stones came together to a single unit. And each one of them wanted to be the pillow for Yaakov. And so then what happened? They all became a single stone. So originally they were 12 separate stones to represent the 12 Shvatim. When he went to lay down, they were fighting about upon which stone he would lay down. Hashem made them into one unit and single stone. And that's evidenced by the fact that when he wakes up, it's a single stone. That single stone, then he anoints when he makes the statement, Vayaseh moto matzeva, Vayitzok Hashem al Rosha, Vayikra Hashem al Mekomo, Beit El, V'ulam Luzay Hashem Ayir LaRishonah. So that's when he anoints it, when he awakens, and he anoints a single matzeva. Matzeva is a single stone, not multiple stones. And that's how we know that it went from being multiple stones into a single stones, because it says Avanim, and then Evan, and then Matzeva. Tosfot says what you're suggesting, which is, why do you have to make it into some miraculous event? He says, the Pshuto Shel Mikra, Yesh Lefaresh Shel Kach Evan Achat, Miavnei HaMakom. Yes, he went, put down Avanim, and then when he took, in the morning in Evan, he took one of the Avanim that he had laid down on. So he took one Evan from amongst the Avanim. And you could have easily explained it, Ala Derech HaPshat, that he had 12 when he went to sleep, and when he woke up in the morning, he took one of those 12, or he took another stone from the location in order to make it the Matzeva. Who says it has to be the same 12 from before as the one that he's taking now? So Tosafot agrees that al derech hapshat, you don't have to say this, because I'll have a Mesorah that that's what happened. And again, it's a symbolic in nature. He has 12 stones, which indicate the 12 different Shvatim. The fact that they unify into a single stone means that they're going to become the entity called Klal Yisrael. They're not going to be 12 separate entities. There's a lot of symbolism in this.
And of course, that's the agadic interpretation of what happened based on the change from Avanim to Eben. So then, Vayachlom, B'nei Sulam Mutzavarza. He has a dream, and then there is a ladder that's in the ground, and Rosho Magia Shemaima. And then the top of the ladder reaches all the way up to the heavens. Tana, Kama Rachbo Shel Sulam. How wide was this Sulam? Shmonat Alafim Parsaot. It was 8,000 Parsaot. Each Parsa is 4 mil. So that's 8,000 times 4, 32,000 mil wide, which is, of course, extremely wide. Dichtiv, how does he know this? Because it says, Hinei Malachei Elukim, Olim V'yordim Bo. They are Malachim ascending the ladder, and they are Malachim descending the ladder. Now, first of all, it says Malachei in plural. So it means that there are multiple Malachim going up and multiple Malachim coming down. Well, the minimum number of a plurality would be two. So that means that minimum there are two Malachim going up and two Malachim coming down. And that's what it says here. Olim Shnaim, Biordim Shnaim. That two are going up and two are going down simultaneously. When they reach the same location on the ladder, those that are ascending and those that are descending, Habalu Arba'a. Then it's four across at that time. And as the ladder has sufficient room for four malachim to get up and down on the ladder. The size of a malach is given to us by the pasuk in Daniel. Ugviato ki tarshish. That its body was like that of Tarshish. Ugmiri. And we have a misora. The Tarshish trei alfei parsiavu. Tarshish was 2,000 parsaot. Or the way that there's an alternate girsa over here. Rashi says, Yam Shel Tarshish, and he says that the Yam Shel Tarshish was 2,000 Amot, or the way, the simple way to read it is that Tarshish itself, which is a seafaring area, we know that from other psukim in Tanakh, that indicate that they launched the boats from Tarshish, but given that Tarshish is a very large commercial city, or that there's a large body of water next to it, the Gemara has a Masora that either the city or the body of water was 2,000 parsaot. So given that their bodies are like Tarshish, if you have four of those bodies next to each other, you're going to have 8,000 parsaot if you have four of them lined up together across the ladder. Tana, olim umistaklim bidyunko shomalo. They go up and they see the image up above. Yordim umistaklim bidyunko shomato. And then they go down and see the image down below. The image down below is clearly Yaakov who's sleeping. The image up above can be one of two possibilities. The image above, which Chazal interpret to be that, the Dmut Dunyon Ko, the face of Yaakov is engraved in the Kisei HaKavod. And that's what they were seeing. They went up and saw the face of Yaakov, and they went down and saw the face of Yaakov. You could say it in an allegorical manner, that they go up and see a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and they go down and see Yaakov. And that appearance seems to be similar, like we have in the Maaser Merkava, where a Kodesh Baruch Hu, even though he's not corporeal and he has no form, he still is described in an allegorical sense as being a Zakein, V'yoshev, or an individual that's on the throne. And maybe that's the reference over here. By the Sukune, they wanted to kill Yaakov because they were jealous of the fact that there was somebody down below that resembled that which was above. V'yad, v'nei Hashem nitzav alav. Hashem then stood over him. Rashi explains over here, shamar alav. That he guarded him and he protected him. Had it not been for the fact that the pasuk wrote it, I wouldn't be able to say this. It's like a parent that's accompanying their child when they're in an area where there are lots of mosquitoes or flies, and he's swatting the flies or the mosquitoes away. So too, Hashem stood over Yaakov and he was swatting the malachim away so that they would not disturb or they would not injure Yaakov. Haaretz asher ata shochev aleha. It says that the land that you're sleeping on, that's going to be yours. The Gemara says, my rebute. What chiddush is that? That the place that you're sleeping on is going to become yours. He sleeps on Dalet Amot. He has all the four Amot that you're sleeping on. So God's saying to him, oh, listen, Yaakov, that place where you slept, that's yours. That's not much of a gift. That's not much of a promise. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Melameh, Shekipla, Kodesh Baruch Hu, L'chol Eretz Yisrael, V'nicha Tachat Yaakov Avinu, Hashem folded up all of Eretz Yisrael and placed it under Yaakov Avinu. Shetei nocha likabesh libanav. Because it'll be easy for his children to conquer it. So you could look at this in one of two ways. One is that he's not sleeping just on Dalet Amot. His Dalet Amot represents all of Eretz Yisrael. When Hashem says, I'm going to give it to you, means I'm going to give you all of Eretz Yisrael because it's all under Yaakov at this point. Or the indication is, yes, it's just on Dalet Amot. But just like the person where they stand, their Dalet Amot belongs to them just because of the space they're taking up, so too the conquest of Eretz Yisrael will be that easy. You'll show up and you'll conquer it because I'll be with you. And that's the way it's going to be when they enter into Eretz Yisrael later on. And that's what it means, that Dalet Amot. Yes, they're only Dalet Amot, but the Dalet Amot represent this idea that just like the Dalet Amot belong to you, so too all of Eretz Yisrael is going to belong to you with the ease of conquest. We're going to take a moment now to discuss a major machloke between Rashi and the Ramban with regards to the structure of what took place over here. The Gemara brings all of this Agadata down. Rashi on Chumash quotes this Agadata in explaining the stories of Yaakov in Chumash. And then Rashi explains what happened over here in terms of Kavsa Haaretz. He says, how did Chazal know that the Kavsa Haaretz and everything that happened? Which is an important statement, which is that when Chazal bring in Agadata, it's usually driven by a problem in the Psukim, and the Midrash or the Agadata is trying to address a problem in the Psukim. Now, it might be allegorical in its explanation, or it might be literal, but it's trying to fill in the missing pieces in the story, or the gap of information that we have because they're Psukim that don't make sense. Rashi says that what it means that Kavsa Haaretz means that Haramoria moved and went to Beit El. That's a Kavsa Haaretz that's mentioned in our Gemara. The Beit HaMikdash came to him to meet him in Beit El. And that's where it was Vayifka Bamakom. So Rashi makes the claim that the ladder that Yaakov is seeing in his dream, the base of the ladder is in Beersheba, the top of the ladder is over Beit El, the middle of the ladder is over Yerushalayim. That's number one. Number two is Yaakov goes from Beersheba to Haran. He gets all the way to Haran, and then he realizes that he passed the place. So he walks all the way back to Beit El. By the time he gets back to Beit El, Hashem moves Yerushalayim to meet him in Beit El. And that's why Yaakov calls the place Beit El, because he really is in Beit El, even though it's Yerushalayim. It's Yerushalayim because he calls it Zeyeh Beit Elukim. This is going to be the house of God, which means that's going to be the Beit HaMikdash. Well, Beit HaMikdash is not in Beit El, it's in Yerushalayim. So Rashi says that's what the Kfitza Taharetz was, that the Yerushalayim moved to greet him in Beit El, and therefore when he sleeps in that location, he's in Yerushalayim, but it's in Beit El. That's how Rashi says both the significance of Yerushalayim being in the middle of the ladder, as well as the fact that Yerushalayim jumped or moved to greet him in Beit El, and that's why he's in Beit El. The Ramban takes issue with Rashi on a number of fronts, and he brings a series of Midrashim that argue about Kfitzat Haaretz, but in every case he shows that Kfitzat Haaretz has nothing to do with the land moving, it has to do with the ability of the individual to make the trip faster. And he brings proofs from Eliezer Eved Avraham that had Kfitzat Haaretz according to Chazal as well. And there again, he says it's not about moving locations, it's about the fact that a journey that should have taken many days happens in a very short time. And he brings Midrashim, which he say may not be mutually exclusive, that Yaakov traveled from Beersheba to Haran in a single day. That was the Kfitzat Haaretz. There's another day that when he went from Haran back to Beit El, that he did it in a very short time. Once he reached Haran, he went back. And that's the Kfitzat Haaretz, which is that the land shrunk to the point where he could walk from Haran back to Beit El without any trouble in a very quick amount of time. And then there's a third Midrash that says, after he awakens in Beit El, he goes on to Haran, that he makes it in no time. He gets there without any delay. So again, all of those are speaking to Kfitzat Haaretz. And the Ramban points out, in each of those cases, the Kfitzat Haaretz says, like from the Pasuk Velo Tikbots Yadcha, which Rashi quotes over here, do not close up your hand. Do not be miserly in giving tzedakah. There, Tikbots means to close, to draw into a smaller location. And that's what it means, Kfitzat Haaretz. The land shrunk to make it a faster journey. For that reason, the Ramban says Rashi thinks is incorrect and explained that Kfitzat Haaretz is a movement of one location to another location, but rather its meaning is that they shrunk so that the person makes the journey in a much faster time. That's number one. Number two is the Ramban says that the ladder in the dream of Yaakov, the Shipu'o, which is where the Chazal speak about being the significant location, he says could not be that Shipu'o was in Yerushalayim, meaning that the middle of the ladder. He says the middle of the ladder is not significant. The base of the ladder is significant, and the top of the ladder is significant. The middle of the ladder has no significance. Therefore, he disagrees with Rashi's assertion here that the ladder was based in Beersheba, top was in Beit El, and the middle was in Yerushalayim, because the middle has no significance. And then the Ramban has a huge chiddush over here, which is that Yaakov went to Beersheba before he left for Haran. And that is because when you leave the land of Israel, you go to Beersheba, and we have evidence of that from the case when Yaakov goes down to Mitzrayim, he stops in Beersheba on his way out. That's true then, and he says it's true now as well. Because Yaakov is with his father, Yitzchak, in Hebron, in Kiryat Arba. So why is he going to Beersheba? So he claims he went to Beersheba to ask permission to leave the land, because Beersheba was a location where tefillot had been accepted in the past. It was a location of significance. So he claims that Yaakov goes out of his way to go to Beersheba in order to leave for Haran. And again, it's out of his way because Haran is to the east. According to the Ramban, it's the southeast. According to most, it's to the northeast. And therefore, it was out of his way to go to Beersheba, but he goes there to daven. That's the place that he slept. And that's where he saw the Sulam and all of the visions. Benatan lo arishut latzeit. And that's where God says to him, you can go, I'm going to be with you. And then the Sulam that he saw, he brings two deyot in the Tanaim as to what he saw. The Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra, the base of the ladder was in Beersheba, the place that he was sleeping. The top of the ladder was opposite the Beit HaMikdash. And because he saw the ladder ascending from Beersheba to Yerushalayim at the top, he knew that that was a good place to daven. And he knows now that the Beit HaMikdash is the Beit Elokim because the top of the ladder is in Yerushalayim Shalmalo. So he knows that that's where the Beit HaMikdash should stand because the Beit HaMikdash Shalmalo is there. That's where the Beit HaMikdash Shalmata is. And in the morning he gets up from Beersheba and goes to Haran in a single day. He kvitz at the derech shelo. And that is the kvitz at the derech according to him. But the Ramban says that the ladder was based in Beersheba. The top was in Yerushalayim. And then after he awakens, he doesn't put the matzevah in Beersheba, but he knows that Beersheba is a good place for tefillah. But he sees that Shar HaShamayim is by Yerushalayim. And therefore he travels on his way after leaving Beersheba to Yerushalayim, and then he puts down the Matzevah there, and he calls it Beit El. Not because it's the real Beit El near Ai, further north in the Shomron, at the border between Binyamin and the Bnei Yosef, but rather the Beit El, meaning the Beit Hashem, the place of Beit Elokim, and it's not the same Beit El that we're talking about, and that we find that in many places in Bereishit, that the places are named after the incident that took place there, even though it might be a different place, including the name of Beersheba, which appears twice, and has given different reasons why it's called Beersheba in each of those instances. He says that's the view of Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra in the Midrash, although he brings a alternate opinion, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Simon, who says that the Sulam was standing in the Beit HaMikdash, and the Shibuo, the top of it, reached Beit El. And then, according to him, he slept by Yerushalayim, that's where the dream happened. And then he put the Matzevah in Beit El later on because he saw that the top of the ladder was there. And therefore, it must be a good place to worship Hashem. So then, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Simon, the ladder started in Yerushalayim and ended in Beit El. He slept in Yerushalayim and then put up the Matzevah in Beit El. Again, the Ramban is making the point that the middle of the ladder doesn't make a difference. It's only where the base is and where the top is. And then he says, V'yaskim datosh Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Simon in Midrash, v'perakir anasheh. And Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon's position agrees with our Gemara here in Chulin. So Yaakov Yatsami Beersheba, he left Beersheba and went to Haran. And when he decided to come back and daven Makom Shit Palulu Avuta Behara Moria, to go back and daven Hara Moria, that's when the land shrunk. But Yivkad Miyad Behara Moria. And that's when he bumped into Hara Moria right away. Veshema Datam Shekapsalo Ba'alichal B'chazara. Maybe it is back and forth. And again, I mentioned to you that he brings other Midrashim. That seems to say that Kvitz HaDerech happened all over the place here. Alright, so there you see a major machlok between Rashi and the Ramban, both about the structure of where the ladder was, and number two is where Yaakov slept when he had the dream, or where he had the dream, and number three is where he put up the Matzevah, and number four is about Kvitz HaDerech. It's the major machlok between the Ramban and Rashi, and the Ramban leans heavily on our Gemara here, seeming to indicate not like Rashi, but rather like what he's suggesting over there. And for a number of reasons, one is Kvitz HaDerech does not mean the land, a place moves to a different place, but rather that you cover the ground at a much higher speed. And number two, from our Gemara, is that the ladder, which was based somewhere and the top was somewhere, Shipuo, or Keneged Shipuo, means the top of the ladder, not the middle of the ladder, whereas Rashi interprets it to mean the middle of the ladder being opposite Yerushalayim. Right, so now Agadata continues and says, Vayomer Shalcheni ki ala shachar, why don't you send me, the Malach says, because the morning has broken. Amalo ganavata o kuvyustosata, are you some sort of thief? And according to Rashi, are you some sort of kidnapper that you're running away, shemitarei min hashachar, that you're afraid to be around during the daylight hours? And these are people who operate at night. And these are people who don't want to be caught by the authorities, so they always hide when the sun rises. They're out of view when things go light. So he's asking, are you some sort of underworld person that you need to then disappear when the light breaks in the morning? That Rashi explains, kuvyustus all over Shas as being gonevne fashoda kidnapper. Tosafot in all those locations argues on Rashi and says that a kuvyustus is a misachek bekubya. He's a gambler. He's not a kidnapper. And he says, why would a gambler be hiding from daylight? Because gamblers rack up high debts. And people are always chasing after him to collect their debts. And so because of that, they don't want to be around in the daytime when people can find them and try to collect their debts from them. So they're always running away from people, and that's why he wasn't visible. So now he says, no, Amar lo malachani. I'm not a thief. I'm not a kidnapper. I'm not a gambler. Rather, I'm a malach. U'miyom shnivrati lo hagiya zmani lomar shira ad akshav. And from the day I was created until now, I didn't have the opportunity to say shira, to sing praise to Hashem. And today is my turn. And so therefore I need to leave to go and sing shira to Hashem. Misayeli Rav Chananel Amar Rav, that helps or is supportive of the position of Rav Chananel Bar Rav. Amar Rav Chananel Bar Rav, Shlosh Kitot Shel Malachei Asheret Omrim Shira B'chol Yom. There are three different groups of Malachim that sing Shira each day. Achat Omeret Kadosh. One group says Kadosh. Achat Omeret Kadosh. And then the next group says Kadosh. Achat Omeret Kadosh Hashem Tzvakot. And the last group says the final part of it, Kadosh Hashem Tzvakot. They're obviously quoting from the Maaseh HaMerkava, which we're going to see here, of Yeshayahu in Perek Vav and Yechezkel in Perek Aleph, and they're using what we know as Kedusha to describe what's going on with the Malachim and what the Malachim say. So now, how is that Misayele the Rab Chananel Berab? How is the fact that he needed to leave to say Shira supportive of his view? So Tosfot says, Perish, B'omesh Omer Malachim Omrim Shira. The fact that he says the Malachim say Shira, that's supported by the story over here. That's one way. Or Inami, Hadakamash Logiyaz Manim Yom Shinivrati. The fact that I've never had a chance to sing Shira until now is supported by this story because of the fact that Rav Chananel Amar Rav says that the Malachim only get to say one word and they say Kadosh and then the next one says Kadosh and then they say Kadoshem Hashem Tzvakot. And there are millions and millions of malachim. And so the chance you get to do that one little shira is very rare. And so given that, it's supportive of his position when we said, now, this is my one chance to go up and say shira. Meitavei, chaviv in Yisrael lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu yotei remalachei asharit. The Klal Yisrael are more beloved to Hashem than the malachim. Yisrael omim shira b'chol sha'ah. B'nei Yisrael say shira at any time. Malachei Asheret, Oni Omrim Shira, La Pamachat, Bayom, only once in the day. V'amila Pamachat B'Shabbat, some say they only can say it once a week. V'amila Pamachat B'Chodesh, some say that it's only once a month. V'amila Pamachat B'Shana, once a year. V'amila Pamachat B'Shavua, once every Shemitah, once every 7 years. V'amila Pamachat B'Yovel, some say only once every 50 years. V'amila Pamachat B'Olam. And some say that it's only once in their lifetime that they get to say it. Yisrael must scream at the shame, achar shtei shtevot. And Bnei Yisrael say it after two words. So as opposed to the Malachim that only say it after three words, which is kadosh, 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 Hashem tzvakot. It's only after three words that they're able to mention the shame Hashem. And they're only allowed to do it once in a blue moon, depends on what you think the frequency is, whether it's once a day, once a week, once a month, once a year, once a Shemitah, once a Yovel, once in their lifetime. It's much rarer than B'nai Yisrael. B'nai Yisrael, on the other hand, can say it every day, and they say it multiple times every day. In addition, they mention the Shem Hashem after two words. Shem Shema Yisrael Hashem. After two words, they already mention Shem Hashem. So B'nai Yisrael are greater than the Malachim. Malachim has imag zugim, ele Hashem, ele achar gimel tevot. They only mention it after three words. Kadosh, 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 Hashem tzvakot, kidichtim. Pasuk says, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakot. Vein Malachi Asheret Omim Shira Lamala, Ad Yomru Yisrael Lamato. And the Malachi Asheret above only can bring their Shira, or begin their Shira after Bnei Yisrael sing Shira down below. Shnemar, because it says, Baran Yachad Kochvei Boker. They were all together the morning stars. Vehadar Bayariu Kol Bnei Elukim. And then only then to burst out or burst forth the Bnei Elukim, the quote-unquote sons of God, meaning the Malachim. The Malachim only can burst forth and be Vayariu. They can only sing and sing the praises of Hashem after Yachad Kochvei Boker. And as Rashi points out, Kochvei Boker refers to Bnei Yisrael, HaMishulim LeKochavim. They're compared to the stars. So only when the children of Israel get together and they have said the Shira, at that point, Vayariu Kol Bnei Elukim. Then those that are above, the Malachim, are able to begin their Shira. So now, the question from this Braita that we just brought was that Rav Chanan Omer Rav said that the Malachim break up Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh into three different sets of Malachim. One says Kadosh, one says Kadosh, and then one says Kadosh Hashem Tzvakot. That means that the third set is really saying Shem Hashem after one word, not after three words, because they didn't say the first two words of Kadosh. So then how do you say that the difference between Bnei Yisrael and the Malachim is Bnei Yisrael says Shem Hashem after two words, Shema Yisrael Hashem. The Malachim say after Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakot. That's not the case according to Rav Chanan Omer Rav. My answer is Ella. The way to explain Amar Rav Chanan Omer Rav is Achat Omer Kadosh. One of them says Kadosh. V'chat Omeret Kadosh, Kadosh. The second set add on another Kadosh. So the first set says Kadosh. Then the next set of Malachim say Kadosh, Kadosh. V'achat Omeret, then the third set of Malachim say Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakot. So they only say the Shem Hashem after three words, and then you've reconciled Rav Chanan Omer Rav with the Midrash. Mar says, Va'aika Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimikomo. What about that? The Malachim also say Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimikomo, and that's after two words. So then why isn't it that they are equal to Bnei Yisrael? The Gemara answers, Baruch Ufanim Hudam Arle. The Malachim don't say Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimkomo, rather the Ufanim say it. And that's what we say in Shacharit, Ve'ofanim V'chayot HaKodesh Omrim. That the Ufanim and the Chayot HaKodesh, Tosafot over here discusses, wherever the Chayot HaKodesh go, so too do the Ufanim go. And therefore, whatever the Chayot HaKodesh do, the Ofanim also do. And that's why we combine them in Shacharit and say, Ofanim v'Chayot HaKodesh, they say, Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimkomo, because they're always together. The only problem with that is that the way that we present it in Shacharit is, Ofanim v'Chayot HaKodesh. Even though the Chayot HaKodesh are leading, and then the Ofanim, we say it in the opposite way, Ofanim v'Chayot HaKodesh, which is a little bit problematic. We really should be saying, Chayot HaKodesh ve'ofanim, according to this view in the Bali HaTosafot. And then the Bali HaTosafot point out that they are distinct from the Serafim. Because the Serafim are the ones that are considered the Malachim. They're the ones that say, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakot. And that's based on the Pasuk in Yishayo that says, Serafim omdim imal lo. And then afterward it says, Vayikara zel zev yamar, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. So you see that's associated with the Serafim as opposed to in Yechezkel, where it says, Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimkomo, that's associated with the Ofanim and the Chayot HaKodesh. So the Serafim are the ones that say the Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. The Ofanim, the Chayot HaKodesh, are the ones that say, Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimkomo, and that's how the Gemara solves the problem. Even though the Gemara in Chagiga seems to compare and contrast the Serafim and Chayot. Over there it says that Serafim, the Pasuk says, have six wings, and the one that says four wings is by the Chayot. So why is the Gemara comparing and contrasting Chayot with Serafim if the Gemara over here says they're totally separate? Serafim are separate from the Ofanim and from the Chayot. So Bayit Tosafot put up a principle which is important, which says that even though they're not the same thing, you would have assumed that they should have the same appearance. And Tosafot uses that and he brings a number of examples throughout Shas whereby you're talking about two different entities. The Gemara compares them and says, how come they don't look alike? But they're not supposed to be alike. They're two different entities. But the Gemara, he says in Mistavra, that since they are both called the same thing or functioning in the same way, that they should look the same. And given that, they're willing to contrast them, Chazal, even though they're not exactly the same item. That's how he explains about Serafim Bofanim. That's what we say in the Kedusha of Shacharit and Shabbat, After we've said Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakot, Malach Halaretz, Kado, Az Bekol Rash Kadol, Adir Chazak Mashmim Kol, Mitnasim Neumat Serafim. There are those that are standing opposite the Serafim, Lumatam Baruch Yomeru. They say Baruch Vod Hashem Mim Komo, implying that it's not the Serafim that are saying the Baruch Vod Hashem Mim Komo. They're the ones who, beforehand, said Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. And then those that are opposite the Serafim, which are the Ofanim and the Chayot HaKodesh, they're the ones who say, Baruch Vod Hashem Mim Komo. Even though in the Pasuk in Yecheskel in Per Gimel, it says, Ve'kol Kanfei HaChayot Meshikot Yishalach Otah, Ve'kol Ofanim Le'umatam, Ve'kol Rash Kadol. Which makes it sound like the Ofanim are connected the Chayot, they're opposite the Chayot. Whereas here we're saying that it's Lumat Serafim. It's opposite the Serafim. Whereas in the Pasuk it really sounds like it's the Umat HaChayot and not the Umat HaSerafim. But that might be again to engender the flow here. Umat HaSerafim playing on that which is said in Yechezkel Paragimel, but really referencing to Pasuk in Yishayel that says the Kadosh, 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 which is what the Serafim say. Vibay Deima, and some suggest Amir, came in the Yitayiv Rishuta Yitayiv. Once they have permission to say the Shem Hashem, they're no longer bound by waiting three words. Once they've already said, Kadosh, 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 Hashem, they've used Hashem's name, then they've opened up the gates, and now they can say Hashem's name even after two words. So that's why Baruch Vod Hashem is not a problem, because once they've done it already once, they can do it afterwards. But once they have to get through that first threshold of saying it with three, and that's the limiting factor for the Malachim, who have to say it after three words, whereas we, Bnei Israel, only say it after two words. Okay, we're going to stop here, two lines down on the top of Tzadi Bet, Amud Aleph.